I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on February 14th, 2023. There is a quorum present. Representative Jacob, may I have a motion to approve the minutes from February 9th, 2023?
So moved.
Representative Jacob moves the approval of the minutes for February 9th, 2023. Any discussion? Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, I think there's a technical change with the author of House File 1147.
Are you referring to the minutes?
Yeah, the ones we're approving. Wasn't that a Hansen bill?
Are you House File 1147?
Yeah. That was a Tabke bill.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for noting that, Representative Anderson. We will get that fixed. All right. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Oh, okay. All right, so we will do the minutes in the next committee. The first item of the agenda today is Second Harvest Heartland. Rachel Sosnochik and Zach Rodvold, please make your way to the testifying table and identify yourself before the committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julie Van Hove, and I am the Director of Sourcing and Demand Planning at Second Harvest Heartland, a food bank that's based in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. In my role, I manage the food bank's food sourcing that we procure through several different food streams, including food that is donated from large manufacturers, food we rescue from grocery stores, produce we source directly from growers, food we receive through federal commodity programs, and food we buy ourselves. I'm here today to present on the Minnesota Milk Grant, which is part of the larger Farm to Food Shelf program. The state of Minnesota currently grants $600,000 a year to Second Harvest Heartland and the other Feeding America food banks in the state to purchase low-cost milk to provide to food shelves. We conduct an RFP every other year to determine our milk supplier for this grant. Prairie Farms, a farmer-owned cooperative with a fluid milk plant in Woodbury, has been our supplier for the last several years. Nearly all of the milk they process comes from Minnesota dairy farmers. We currently source a mix of half and full gallons of 1% milk, which was chosen based on food client preferences. Each Feeding America food bank receives a portion of the milk grant funds based on the Emergency Food Assistance Program, or TFAP, allocation formula. This formula uses measures of poverty and unemployment along with population size to approximate the need for food assistance in the communities across the country. The food banks purchase milk directly from Prairie Farms using their portion of those milk grant funds. We provide quarterly reports to this committee showing how farm to food shelf funds, including the milk grant, have been spent and how much milk is distributed in counties across the state. We also shared an overview of fiscal year 2022 farm to food shelf spending and distribution ahead of today's meeting. Last year, milk grant funds provided over 343,000 gallons of milk to Minnesotans in need. Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, milk grant funds provided about 6 months worth of free milk to Minnesota's hunger relief network. However, in recent years, we've seen increased demand for food assistance due to the pandemic, the rising cost of necessities like groceries, gas, and rent, and the end of federal supports like the expanded child tax credit and enhanced unemployment insurance benefits. In 2022, demand for milk was up 40% at the food shelves that Second Harvest Heartland serves. On top of the increased need, the cost of milk is also up more than 20% compared to last year. Prairie Farms has provided both a letter and a cost summary showing how their input costs to produce and process milk have increased over the last few years, trends that hold true across the sector. Those additional costs are passed on to food banks as buyers in order to keep Prairie Farms and the farmers they support in business. With both demands and costs up in 2022, milk grant funds only lasted about 3 months compared to the usual 6 months that it had prior to the pandemic. When food banks source donated products or receive public funds to purchase food, we then provide those products at little to no cost to our food shelf partners. However, when we have to buy food using our own funds, we often pass on all or a small percentage of that cost to partners or decide on a monthly basis whether or not we can continue to provide the product for free. When Second Harvest Heartland's allocation of milk grant funds ran out in October, we made the decision to continue to subsidize the cost so that milk remained free for food shelves. This amounted to an additional $200,000 we were paying each month, money that we weren't that we were spending on top of our budgeted food costs. We were lucky to be in a financial position to be able to afford that at the time, but we can't always guarantee that that's going to be the case. Moreover, we know that food shelves require stability and consistency from food banks, consistency in the type of foods and the quality and the quantity of those foods, and perhaps most importantly, the cost of those foods. Our hope is that the milk grant can be used to provide consistent access to free milk for Minnesota food shelves in the years to come. Finally, I want to express our appreciation to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture for including a $250,000 per year increase in milk grant funding in their proposed budget released last month. The department has been a strong partner to Minnesota food banks, especially these last few years. And this increase reflects the awareness of the challenges we face trying to provide the staples Minnesota families rely on. I'm happy to take any questions the committee may have about the program or how the funds are used. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Julie. Questions from the committee? All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today and testifying in front of the committee. Today, I just want to note that tomorrow is Dairy Day on the Hill, and in honor of that, we will be talking about milk grants, and which is on this next bill on House File 1554. Representative Frederick. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. This bill essentially funds the presentation that we just heard. There's three different categories that the grant would be, or the appropriation would go towards, which is the milk distribution. The second piece is just gathering food of all different types, and the third piece specifically addresses the protein, since those are the most expensive portions of food that can be acquired. So. I think that since we had just had a presentation kind of going over things, I would just like to turn it over to the questions from the committee, Madam Chair.
All right. And Representative Frederick, would you like to move your bill to be laid over possible inclusion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. We'll move to testimony. Julie Van Hoel, please proceed.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Julie Van Hove, and I'm the Director of Sourcing and Demand Planning at Second Harvest Heartland. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1554 to increase funding for Minnesota's Farm to Food Shelf program. I'll begin by briefly defining our work. Simply put, food banks move food from where there is more than enough food to where there is a need. In the Heartland, where there's plenty of food to go around, food banks like ours tackle the complex logistics of sourcing and storing millions of pounds of food each year and transporting that food out to over 700 community partners across the state. Last year, Second Harvest Heartland distributed over 122 million pounds of food, adding up to more than 113 million meals. We are one of the largest food banks in the country and leverage our staff capacity and buying power to source food on behalf of Minnesota's other Feeding America food banks and for the entire Midwest region. The vast majority of the food we distribute and funding we receive to do this work, around 90%, comes from private donors, with the remaining 10% coming from the state and federal government. Our scale and efficiency help us to effectively administer farm-to-food shelf program funds to source local produce, protein, and milk. While the funding is appropriated to us, we use these state dollars to connect food to hunger relief organizations across all 87 Minnesota counties, with each food bank responsible for distributing products to the food shelves and meal programs within their own service area. We are coming off a year of unprecedented need in our state. Our partners at Hunger Solutions Minnesota reported that there were over 5.5 million food shelf visits in Minnesota in 2022. When we see the cost of groceries, rent, and gas prices rise, it almost always follows that there is increased demand for food assistance at our partner organizations. Moreover, many of the federal supports that were in place during the pandemic ended last year, leaving Minnesotans with fewer places to turn for help. Just next month, we'll see the end of emergency SNAP benefits, another COVID-era program, which we expect will lead to another surge in need on top of the historic demand in 2022. Minnesota's food banks are experiencing the same sky-high prices consumers are. Across the board, Second Harvest Heartland's prices are 20% higher than last year for foods we need to purchase. The amount of food we've needed to buy has increased by 50% as we seek to meet the increased demand and fill a 7 million pound gap left by a 40% decline in food provided by federal commodity programs. Over the past year, the price of milk we purchased has soared, while demand for milk at our food shelf partners has increased. This is where Farm to Food Shelf can help alleviate some of the pressure on Hunger Relief Network to provide staples like produce, milk, and protein to the communities we serve. We are requesting an additional $4.4 million in ongoing Farm to Food Shelf funds each year to bolster our local food sourcing, with a particular focus on increasing the amount of milk and protein we can offer at little to no cost to our food shelf partners. Of our requested $6.1 million in Farm to Food Shelf funding for the next year, $1.6 million would be dedicated to purchasing low-cost milk, which would enable food banks to provide year-round access to free milk at food shelves. Current milk grant funding levels of $600,000 used to last us half a year, as I said earlier. This year, funds were almost entirely depleted after only 3 months. When funding runs out, food banks like Second Harvest Heartland must decide if we're able to cover the costs ourselves to keep the product free to food shelves. This fall, we were able to do that, but that is not sustainable for us and all of our partners and doesn't provide our partners with the stability needed to effectively serve their communities. $3 million of our request will be used to purchase locally raised or processed protein products. While we are grateful to have language added to the Farm to Food Shelf during the 2021 legislative session allowing us to use these funds to buy protein, without receiving additional money, we have not been able to fully realize the potential for local protein sourcing through this program. However, we know there's plenty of product out there. Over the last few years, food banks have received several rounds of state and federal COVID relief funds, much of which was spent purchasing local foods to distribute through the emergency food system. We are ready to leverage these sourcing connections again as additional funds become available, and our request reflects our local protein sourcing capacity. Finally, $1.5 million would be used to support the reimbursements offered to Minnesota farmers who donate produce to the state's food banks. Farm to Food Shelf supplies nearly one-third of the fresh produce we source from farms each year. While the produce is donated, they often incur costs to harvest, transport, or package the products, and Farm to Food Shelf reimbursements ensure these donations aren't a financial burden. Each year, we typically run out of program funds while farmers still have produce to donate and then must find other funding sources to help cover their costs. In summary, Minnesota's Farm to Food Shelf program provides critical dairy, protein, and produce for Minnesota's Feeding America food banks. At a time when food insecurity remains elevated in our state, additional funding is needed in order to meet increased demand for food assistance. Thank you very much for your consideration of this bill and for your time today. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Our next testifier is Gary Paul from Paul Farms in Apple Valley. If you can make your way to the testifying table and identify yourself before the committee.
Madam Chair, committee, Gary Paul, Paul Farms, Apple Valley, Minnesota, fifth generation vegetable grower. Been partnering with Second Harvest for approximately 10 to 12 years, if I'm not mistaken. And during that time, when we originally first started with Second Harvest, our employees were, when we were packing produce and that kind of thing, they see the truck loading up, and they're always curious to see where, you know, our produce is going. I mean, we ship produce anywhere from throughout central Canada all the way down through basically the central United States, you know, down through Houston, Texas, Dallas, Chicago, kind of keep on that 35 corridor. But they were intrigued by where this load was going, and one of our main people were saying, you know, where's this, where are we shipping this load? And I go, well, this is going to the food shelf. And he kind of stopped dead in his tracks, and he goes, the food shelf? I go, yeah, this is kind of a program that was designed to feed the hungry. And he basically stopped dead in his tracks. He goes, are you kidding me? I go, we're fortunate to have the people that, in the resources to have a meal in front of us every day. I go, there's a lot of people out there that can't be doing that. And this guy is a first generation immigrant from Ukraine, and he now has his green card, and he still works with us, and he is so tickled to see that we provide food for the hungry on a weekly basis throughout the summertime. And when they called to ask me, and they go, well, we're looking for an additional 400,000. I go, 400,000? I go, what the hell is 400,000? I go, you should be asking for another million. I go, there's growers out there in our line of work that can provide and want to provide more fresh produce to Second Harvest and the food shops out there. And as Julie was saying, if you have 5.5 million people going through the food shelves every single year, that is, I mean, I can't fathom the people that look forward to at least having fresh vegetables and fresh fruit, you know, put in front of them, only, you know, because of you people can provide the funding and provide the costs that help put the food in front of them. And it's just, it's heartwarming to know that our employees care. It's heartwarming to know that the people that I work with in Second Harvest care about what they do. And then you get down to the food shelf partners that they provide food to. It's just like, what a great network to be a part of. What a great sense of feeling and belonging that brings to not only our organization, our employees. It's a great thing for people to do. So if I can answer any questions, that'd be great.
Thank you, Gary, for your testimony. Appreciate you being here.
You're welcome.
The next testifier we have is Jessica Francis, Executive Director of Open Cupboard in Oakdale, Minnesota. Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Hello, my name is Jessica Francis, and I'm the Executive Director of Open Cupboard, which is in the East Metro in Oakdale. I'm happy to be here with you today and share what we've been experiencing over the last few years. Our food shelf provides food to our community in a variety of ways, but all of our different programs have a similar emphasis on fresh and healthy food. While many people, when they think of food shelves, they think of, you know, lines of shelves with cans and boxes of food, there's almost none of that at our food shelf. We know that fresh produce and milk and meat and protein items, those are the items that are most expensive at the grocery store and most out of reach. And so we work to make those items accessible. We consistently hear from families who say they were able to stay healthy during a time of crisis because of the milk and fresh produce and protein items that they were able to get from us. Since the pandemic began, our food shelf has grown from serving about 420 households a week on average to serving more than 4,000 households a week. That's a 941% increase in less than 3 years. And it shows no signs of slowing. Just last week, we had multiple programs that had record levels of service. We've grown this staggering amount thanks to over 700 volunteers last year, more than 10 grocery stores that donate food every week, and partners like Second Harvest Heartland that help us meet this need. But with all of that support, even with all of that support, the soaring need has meant that our food expenses exceeded our budget by over $100,000 last year, and that's just our food budget. It's been a critical challenge for our food shelves, or our food shelf, and I know many others. We're just working hard every day to keep up with the need in our community. Many of the people that we serve that are of working age are working, sometimes multiple jobs. Their income may stretch enough to meet their housing needs and their vehicle, pay for their vehicle to get to work, but they don't have enough left over for those more expensive items. And so that's where our food shelves come in. We're able to get them the milk and protein items and fresh produce. So with that, you know, seniors are able to stay healthy and stay in their homes. Kids have the food that they need to focus in school, and families have the stability that comes from having food on the table during a time of crisis. Milk is one key item that we always need at the food shelf. And when it's available at no cost at the food bank, we don't have to choose between milk and another really essential item. Today, we'll serve about 800 families through our different programs, and the majority of them will be looking for milk. It's always a tough day when we don't have milk to offer the seniors at our senior mobile food shelf, or we don't have milk to offer in our today's harvest markets. If we had a stable source for it year-round, the people that we serve would greatly benefit. Our food shelf has grown that 941% over the last few years because of the huge need in our community, but also because of our use of fresh food and our focus on healthy food, the items that people tell us they need the most. One senior recently told us the following: "You offer no judgment and a variety of fresh groceries. This helps me use my food wisely and have a healthier lifestyle." So by increasing the availability of fresh produce, milk, and protein items available at food shelves, this bill will help food shelves provide what families and seniors tell us they need most. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Jessica. Our last testifier is Daisy DeLune Escueda, manager of Echo Food Shelf in Mankato. If you can make your way, identify yourself before the committee, and proceed. Thank you for being here today.
First of all, thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of our board, our staff, volunteers, and our clients. My name is Daisy, and I manage the food shelf in Mankato. We are one of the largest in the state. This June will mark my 20th year at Echo. I have witnessed the vital role that food shelves have played through the recessions, natural disasters, pandemic, and the inflation that we are now experiencing. This farm bill is crucial for us. Food shelf use is on the rise, and we are spending more and more on food. At Echo, we saw an 18% increase compared to pre-pandemic years, an 82% increase compared to the pandemic. During the pandemic, as we all know, there were many programs in place. They worked, and food shelf use decreased. We are currently serving about 100 households or families each day. A lot of the times, it seems more like 115 or 130. Our board had budgeted for $320,000 to spend during the fiscal year. We spent that money in the first 6 months. We were not splurging. We were just buying the basics. A lot of that was going to eggs and protein. Fortunately, we had the reserves to stay open and for our work to not be interrupted. Food shelves have come a long way. We just don't carry dry goods. We are more like a free grocery store with an array of fresh, frozen, and dry items. Produce, milk, eggs, and protein are the most sought goods at our food shelf and can be quite expensive, especially when families are already on a tight budget. My food shelf is in a county with one of the highest poverty rates in the whole state. But our impact is not just limited to Blue Earth County and the city of North Mankato. It extends into 24 counties and all of greater Minnesota. We see the numbers, we feel the tension, and we hear the stories. The additional grants can provide relief to food banks and the food shelves, as well as alleviate the effects of inflation that Minnesotans are feeling. Your support of the Farm Bill is greatly appreciated by Minnesotans across the whole state. Thank you.
Thank you, Daisy. Any questions from the committee? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks to all that testified. You do important work, and helping keep people fed is extremely important. I'd like to, if Jessica could come back up for a question, I'd appreciate it. And what my question is, Madam Chair, is she mentioned that some of the time they're out of milk. And just wondering, if she could give us an idea of how much of the time you're out of milk. You know, milk is a great thing to have. So how short do you get sometimes with milk?
Director Jessica?
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for that question. So our food shelf uses about 750 full gallons and 1,800 half gallons every week just to meet our needs. And we prioritize the milk. And so if we don't have milk, it's usually right now because we had to cut an order for either budgetary reasons, which is very rare right now. But with our $100,000 deficit from last year, that could increase. But I would say right now we're prioritizing milk. So it is rare that we don't have it. But that could very well change if the milk wasn't made available to us at low cost or no cost as often it is right now.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. And to the bill author, and again, I think I heard the term 1.3 million for milk looking ahead, but your bill does not have a minimum amount to be spent on milk, whereas previous ag bills did have an amount, kind of a baseline for milk. Is there a reason you don't have a bottom line minimum purchase for milk in your bill?
Representative Federick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say that not prescripting out specifics in each category gave the most flexibility to the food shelves, but if they would have it to like to weigh in too and kind of have an opinion on it, I think we could welcome their testimony as well. I think part of the reason that there's not in my bill was just for that flexibility. And I'm not familiar, I don't remember the previous year's limits of what they had put in either.
Director Julie, would you like to respond? Yeah. Please proceed to the testifying table.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I would add, I think in the last two cycles, there was a minimum amount. It was $550,000 two cycles ago and $600,000 for the last 2 years. I would agree with the representative that not putting those limits or minimums does provide most flexibility, but we certainly would be open. I mean, we have no intent to spend less than $600,000 on milk, which has been the floor or the floor in the past, but I think I would agree it's been with flexibility, but we are open to consider floors.
Final follow-up, Representative Anderson.
Yeah, thank you again, Madam Chair. Yeah, did you use the term 1.3 million, I thought, for milk purchases, ma'am?
We are asking for 1.6 million in this current bill, which is a million more than what it has been annually before.
Go ahead, Representative Anderson.
Thanks again for your patience. I think it was your testimony that mentioned that because of pullbacks in federal funding for nutrition programs, the need is greater now with your programs. Could you talk about that a little bit? Is it cutbacks because of COVID programs ending, or what kind of things are the feds cutting back on that makes our situation a little bit tougher here?
Yeah. Director Julie?
Thank you for your question, Madam Chair, Representative. It's been from a myriad of places. From a food source perspective, it's been the TFAP program that has been significantly down this last year relative to what we saw during COVID. So there was a lot of incremental food coming through the USDA TFAP program. That also included the Farmers to Families food boxes that were also being directed by the USDA. And then there has been several grants that came our way, CARES grants, ARPA grants, both state and federal grant funding that we were using to purchase food and focused in those purchases. We focused on milk and protein and produce. And that those funds were, you know, obviously one-time funds. Okay.
Representative Reen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for this testimony. It's really interesting for me to hear this. We have a food shelf in Eden Prairie that serves the residents of Chanhassen and Eden Prairie, and I know people don't think of our area as being a place where there'd be a lot of food insecurity, but there actually is. It's a very popular food shelf, and I think we have one in Chaska called Bountiful Harvest, too, that serves a lot of our residents. I was intrigued by the numbers that were presented about seniors having being the fastest growing sector of, you know, food insecure individuals. And that makes sense to me, but I wonder if you could talk to that a bit, and also whether now with the passage of the universal school lunch program, if that will affect your numbers at all. But yeah, if you could take that question.
Director Julie?
Yeah.
Rachel, do you mind? Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Hi, my name is Rachel Sosnochik. I'm a public affairs specialist at Second Harvest Heartland. I think your question is maybe more in my wheelhouse than in Julie, so I'll take that. So I think to your first question about, you know, different age groups and trends in food shelf visits, you know, Hunger Solutions Minnesota just released data last week looking at food shelf visits in 2022 compared to prior years. And I know that seniors were one of the fastest growing groups. I believe they saw about a 40% increase in visits in 2022 compared to the year prior. And so I think, you know, that's helpful for us to know, again, as some of the different federal programs change, particularly with SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or you might know it as food stamps, until this March, so a month from now, all people who receive SNAP benefits are receiving the maximum amount for their household size. And we know that for seniors, that's led to an increase of around $100 a month, if not more, in the amount of SNAP benefits they're getting. But starting in March, those benefits will go away. And so we anticipate that we'll only actually see increased need for that population. And so that's going to put additional pressure on you know, food shelves and other organizations serving folks who need food assistance. I think your question about the universal school meals bill is a really good one too. The way that we look at our work is that we work together, the Hunt, kind of the emergency food system, a network of food banks and food shelves and meal programs, really work in partnership with some of the more federal nutrition programs. So things like SNAP, things like, you know, free school breakfast and school lunch. We do anticipate that having universal school meals in Minnesota will have a huge positive impact and will reduce the number of kids who are experiencing food insecurity. And so we're, of course, very supportive of that. But we do know that, you know, even during the pandemic, when we actually had universal school meals, people were still going to food shelves. There's still going to be that need there. And so so our bill and what we're hoping to do with these funds will, you know, be related and working towards the same goal that is really about bolstering that that emergency food system outside of the federal nutrition programs like school meals.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that comment. That's really interesting. The other comment I have is, you know, when I look at food issues from an environmental lens, I think about all the waste that we see with food, and I know Second Harvest has been working on this for decades, and that's why I was so enjoyed learning about Second Harvest and how they are able to package it and transport it to the food shelves where they need it. And I think it's great. I don't know if you want to talk more about that, but I think, you know, environmentally speaking, when we're looking at trying to reduce our waste, I think, you know, these kind of programs make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Rachel?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative.
As well.
I will, yeah, I'll give an answer, and if Julie has anything that she wants to elaborate on, just since I'm sitting here. Yes, we do a lot of food rescue. So the produce that we source through the Farm to Food Shelf program is produce that would otherwise go unharvested or unsold. And so there's sort of a food rescue element to the work that we do with funds that we receive through Farm to Food Shelf. We also do a lot of retail food rescue, so working with grocery stores across our service area to collect food that they you know, can't sell for whatever reason, but it's still perfectly, you know, good and edible, and connecting that to food shelves. So that is roughly a third of the food that we distribute. I believe is around 40 million pounds that we rescue from grocery stores every year. So it's a really significant part of our food sourcing stream. And we also do a smaller amount of prepared food rescue. So, you know, caterers, hotels, you know, places where there's food that's been already made. We get it in, often it's like a hotel sheet pan, like a big metal aluminum tray, and connecting that with meal programs. So people who are serving prepared food as kind of part of their regular operations. That's a much smaller portion of the food we distribute, but that is also really important. And so we do food rescue in a lot of different ways.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and a question for Second Harvest. And just wanting to clarify, maybe you did say this on 1.14 and 1.15. So the bill talks about providing grants to Second Harvest on behalf of the six Feeding America food banks. And my question is about other food banks. Mm-hmm. So I go to those 1.14 and 1.15, which says you may enter into contracts or agreements with food banks. So are those food banks outside of the network, the Second Harvest, that you could contract with? Is that the intent?
Yeah. Rachel?
Madam Chair, Representative, as far as I know, the only non-Feeding America food bank in Minnesota is the Food Group. And so we work with them and partner with them in other ways, but they don't receive the funds through this grant. But with working with the other Feeding America food banks, we do still have statewide coverage. And I think that is really the intent, although I was not at Second Harvest when the Farm to Food Shelf program was initially created. But from my understanding and in practice and how the program is implemented, you know, working, kind of having that network of Feeding America food banks identified in the bill language is a way of ensuring that we're reaching statewide, and we already work so closely together and have a lot of sourcing partnerships already. So administratively, it's very easy for us to implement.
Members, I just want to note, if you can keep your questions and testifiers, your answers concise. Representative Frederick has a busy day today, so he needs to dip out soon for another bill hearing. So final follow-up, Representative Hansen?
No. Good.
Okay. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Hansen spoke to some of the questions that I had. I know my local food banks use the distribution through Channel One. So I wanted to make sure that this is getting to all of the need that we see all across the state. And I think that you have mostly addressed that, but if there's any other piece of this, to make sure that, you know, it's every corner of the state, that we know that there's a huge need.
Rachel?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative. Two things really quickly. We did include, we have a letter of support from the other Minnesota Feeding America food banks, which I hope helps to indicate to you all that this is something that does benefit all of the food banks that we work with and the partners that they serve. And we also included our fiscal year 22 overview of how Farm to Food Shelf program funds were used and distributed. And so there is a county breakdown, so you can see for the counties that you represent how much food made it there. So I hope that helps show that this does have statewide reach.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure who this question needs to be addressed to, but so if I understand that the numbers of people going to the Second Harvest food banks as a whole list is on the rise. Can someone please explain that people walking through the door, is it anyone can come through and receive food, or is this income-based? What's the guidelines for that?
Representative Frederick or Rachel?
So, Madam Chair, I think I might pass this to one of our food shelf representatives that's here. I think they would be best able to explain from their experience. What I'll say is I know that it can differ depending on the food shelf. And so I think it would just be best to hear from them directly.
Okay, if you can make your way to the testifying table. Please identify yourself before the committee.
Daisy De Leon Esqueda, Echo Food Shelf. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. So from what I understand, USDA does not allow us to ask for income. We do, however, ask what programs they are on. What we are finding is that more than 80% of our clients or households are participating in some program where they do have to provide or their proof of income. So they are either on SNAP, they're on WIC,
food and reduce program. They're on medical assistance through the state, weatherization. So programs that they do have to provide some type of income guideline or meet their income guidelines.
Representative Harder.
Thank you. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you. Any further questions? Do we also have any further testifiers before the committee? All right. Representative Federick, closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As we've heard in testimony, that funds coming from the federal level are not what they once were. Need is going up along with prices. And so this bill is hoping to address some of that so Minnesotans from every corner of the state can continue to have access to fresh food. So I would appreciate the committee's support.
All right. Would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Federick renews his motion to laid over House File 1554. House File 1554 is laid over. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1034, Representative Purcell, on the Cooperative Grant Program. Please move your bill, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Bill House File 1034 for possible inclusion in our agricultural budget.
Thank you. To your bill, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I'm thrilled for the opportunity to present my very first bill, House File 1034, which will reestablish cooperative development grants at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Chair Vang, this builds on work that you have been doing the last two sessions, funding and expanding a program that was reauthorized in last year's Agriculture Omnibus Bill. In short, this bill allows MDA to make grants to help producers develop cooperatives to process and market Minnesota-grown agricultural products. I'm excited that this is my first bill before this committee because co-ops started under this bill will help diversify farm income, develop supply chains for emerging crops, and keep more wealth in our rural communities. The language in this bill mirrors a program that was in statute at MDA up until budgetary pressures led to its removal in the early 2000s. It's timely and important that we bring this program back for two reasons. First, because Minnesota farmers are growing new, often high-value crops for which the market and supply chain is still emerging. Producer-led cooperatives can help these producers develop the processing and marketing infrastructure needed to grow the market for these crops. Last Thursday, for example, this committee heard from MFU's vice president, who we will be hearing from shortly here as well, Ann Schwagel, who is a founding member of a cooperative established to market the perennial wheatgrass Kernza. We're really lucky to have her back again today. A key challenge for these friends of mine is finding processing, and this grant program would help jumpstart the work for them to form a cooperative. Secondly, cooperative development is timely because many producers are becoming frustrated with supply chain bottlenecks and want to build alternative models for marketing and processing products. This is particularly true in the wake of COVID-19. For example, this committee has done significant work to address the severe shortage of local meat processing. In the face of this, some farmers are thinking about how they can come together to process livestock cooperatively to meet consumer demand. Finally, I'll address two updates in the bill. First, this bill funds the program at $400,000 per year from the general fund. I'm sure the need is greater, but with the maximum award of $50,000 at this time, we thought this was sort of a good starting place. Second, this bill allows cooperatives organized under 308B, those that can take investors, to participate in the program so long as only farmers have control of the cooperative. Financing is a central challenge, and this will help emerging farmers and others who have limited access to capital to use this program. I would like to thank my co-authors from the committee, Chair Vang, Rep. Burkle, Rep. Nelson, Rep. Harder, Rep. Hansen, Rep. Tapke, Rep. Sensormira, Rep. Cha, and Rep. Green. Cooperative development is a tool we can use to help Minnesota producers innovate and build new models that better serve their farm businesses and their communities. And Madam Chair, I'd like to invite some testifiers.
All right, so we'll move to our testifiers. First one we have is Carmen Fernhals. If you can proceed to the testifying table.
I think Carmen is not able to join us.
Okay. Next is Ann Swagger.
Yes, farmer from Perennial Promise Growers Cooperative. You can identify yourself before the committee and proceed. Thank you.
Sure. Chair Vang, members, good afternoon. My name is Ann Schwagel, and I serve as the Vice President of Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm also here in my capacity as a founding member of the Perennial Promise Growers Cooperative. Together with farmers from across the state, all the way from Roseau in Representative Burkle's district, down to Northfield in Vice Chair Purcell's district, we are working collectively to market perennial crops developed by the University of Minnesota's Forever Green Initiative. We started with the perennial intermediate wheatgrass, Kernza, which delivers important ecosystem services to the state of Minnesota by retaining topsoil, promoting water quality, and helping make our farmland resistant to extreme weather events. On behalf of both our cooperative and the Farmers Union, I want to share our strong support for House File 1034. We've worked on this in past sessions with your leadership, Chair Vang, and are eager to see these grants funded this year. For members of Perennial Promise, the cooperative model was important for a couple key reasons. First, because it allowed farmers and rural communities to benefit from the opportunity that is commercializing this new crop. That doesn't happen very often. As we build our cooperative, instead of any returns going to our shareholders, they go back to our farmer members to be reinvested into our co-op or directly into our farms. This benefits our communities because the money is revolving back to Main Street businesses and others in our local economy. Second, and on the other side of that same coin, it helps us manage the risks inherent in trying to commercialize a new crop. Instead of all of us going out and trying to outcompete our fellow farmers, we're spreading the risk out across the members of our cooperative. This helps stabilize the price and gets new farmers started growing this crop in a way that will benefit their operations and not jeopardize their finances. For our market partners, our cooperative can deliver a consistent, reliable product at a predictable, fair price. That said, with these benefits, there are also real challenges we've faced in developing a cooperative from scratch. A big one that this bill would address is the early stage capital needed to fund market development, write business plans, and take the next step in commercialization. Grant funding that would be made available under this bill wouldn't cover what we need to develop necessary seed cleaning infrastructure, but it would allow us to do the market development research we need to be able to approach bank financing or receive a larger grant through USDA. In closing, cooperatives are important to me as a farmer. They deliver benefits to our communities, and the state will benefit from supporting this development. Thank you, Vice Chair Purcell, for your leadership, and I hope this proposal can earn your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Our next testifier is Rodrigo Cala. If you can make your way to the testifying table, identify yourself before the committee and proceed. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Hi. Thank you, Chair Bang, and members of the committee. My name is Rodrigo Cala. I am a farmer. And I am happy to share my support for Rep. Purcell Bill to provide early funding for co-op's development. And why? I am a part of a farmer's co-op. I have three examples of that. And why is the reason to support this kind of work? It's the only way to for a farmer to compete with big corporations is to be a part of a co-op. I have three examples. The first one is Agua Gorda Co-op, based in Long Prairie, Minnesota. It's a group of Latino farmers. Some of them hardly speak any English, but they have, I mean, people, they think Latinos just are hard workers, but no, we have the ability to run businesses if we have the support. And these farmers, they started in 2012, taking farm trainings. Then on 2014, they buy a 54 acres farm. Then they grow produce for selling into the schools. until hospitals and restaurants on the Twin Cities. In 2016, we formed Sharegrounds Farmer Co-op. This co-op is owned by six farms. Four farms are owned by Latino farmers, and two farms are owned by Anglo farmers. Last year, we closed down Sharegrounds. Why? Because it's so expensive to run these kind of businesses. Farm businesses are difficult already. So this year, we open another co-op named Three Range Poultry Alliance. It's owned by 50 farms around the state. We're going to focus our production on chickens, corn, and vegetables. And COVID-19 changed everything. And COVID-19 gave a tablespoon of what it can be in the future if we are not prepared for this. I mean, farm workers are the first line if we try to survive some of these issues. And for me, it's so important to support this work because I think in the future, if we don't do the work right now, we're going to be many issues with climate change. So thank you so much for giving the opportunity to share my experience and my history. And I am a farm trainer too, and I'm working with not just with Latino communities, I work with African-American community, with the Hmong community, and recently I started working with the Native American community. So if we really want to support this kind of work with co-ops, the only way to do this is to the early support when we forming co-ops. My first language is Spanish, so try to translate sometimes from one language to another. It is a challenge for me. So I mean, if you give us the opportunity to work with all these farmers around the state, it's gonna be really a big support. Thank you so much. If you have any questions, I'm gonna be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rodrigo, for your testimony. Our next testifier is Jim Chamberlain, a cattle producer. If you can make your way to the.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity, and members of the committee for this opportunity to testify. Thanks for allowing me to testify remotely. I wish I could be there in person. My name is Jim Chamberlain, and I'm glad to share my support for House File 1034 to establish a cooperative development grant program at the Minnesota Department of Ag. My wife Audra and I farm near Deerwood, where we raise vegetables and livestock and sell direct to consumers. At my day job, I work as a conservationist for Happy Dancing Turtle, a small nonprofit located in Pine River. I'm also board chair and past employee of Crow Wing Soil and Water Conservation District. Through 30 years, almost 30 years of this work, I've come to the realization that long-term conservation solutions are best addressed through markets. The Pine River watershed, where Happy Dancing Turtle is located, has been recognized by the U.S. Forest Service as one of the top four most important watersheds in the eastern United States in terms of providing clean drinking water to the most people. It has also been determined to be one of the most threatened. However, we believe there is a unique opportunity for market-driven conservation in the Pine River watershed, where water from the agriculturally dominated landscape with a high rate of poverty flows to the Whitefish chain of lakes, one of the most affluent lake regions in our state. We also believe that agriculture done well protects our natural resources. To promote this message, we started a program called Cows for Clean Water, where we work with producers and other resource professionals to get conservation on the ground, educate downstream consumers on the challenges farmers and ranchers face in growing food in a way that protects our resources, and we work to build local supply chains to support this market-driven conservation initiative. In the Pine River watershed, we have marginal soils, with just 10% of our soils classified as prime farmland. However, it is good pasture land with an average of 10 to 12,000 cow-calf pairs in our county on a given year. Yet we only have one meat processor, a custom butcher shop that processes 3 to 5 animals a week. Through 10 years of this work, we have seen much success, from increased conservation on the land to greater consumer awareness. Working with partners like the Minnesota Farmers Union and my alma mater, Central Lakes College, we have secured funding for new meat processing facilities and workforce development. And we've identified a branded ground beef product as the best option to provide a viable market which supports financial stability for our local producers and is in high demand from consumers. Farmers in our area are excited for this market possibility, but the meat industry is incredibly competitive, and it's difficult to develop a shared vision that pairs with financial viability. For farmers and ranchers to invest in this market, we need to know what makes business sense. This is where we lean on consultants, but again, that costs money. A grant program like this is the missing piece in our work. It will support feasibility studies and business planning and help develop the shared vision needed for producers to invest in this market. I'm excited for this grant opportunity and economic opportunities it will provide for rural communities like Pine River. I hope it earns your support. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Jim. That is all for our testifiers. Do we have any further testifiers? Okay. Any discussion from the committee? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Purcell, why did you add the 308B cooperatives to your bill?
Representative Purcell?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, thank you. When you and I were discussing this bill some weeks back, I did not know the answer to that and had to do a little digging to figure out the difference between the 308A and the 308B versions of cooperatives. I think we don't want to limit if folks think that one structure is better for their business model than others. I'm not an expert in the statute and the tax structure, but I think just to make sure that we're not overly limiting and then having that stipulation in there that if there are investors, we want to make sure those investors are the farmers. I'm not sure I can get any more specific. Not sure if that answers your question.
Representative Anderson.
Did you say that the investors would be farmers, all of them?
I believe that's what the bill language says, so that you can have investors, but that they must be the farmers themselves. Let me try to find the line number.
No, that's...
Can I phone a friend?
Yes. Stu Laurie, if you can identify yourself before the committee.
I'm new at this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee, and thank you, Vice Chair Purcell. Representative Anderson, to your question, Minnesota Farmers Union asked for that change. We worked on it last session, and the intent of the bill is to allow 308B cooperatives, which unlike 308A, which is strict farmer-owned cooperatives, 308B is a little more flexible and allows non-patron investors. So investors that aren't farmers. The feedback that we got from some folks, for example, Angela Dawson testified before this committee a couple of weeks ago, is that particularly for emerging farmers, sometimes the farmers themselves don't have the capital to fund a cooperative. What Farmers Union doesn't want is for the state to support a cooperative and then farmers to lose control. So we've tried to add that flexibility where you can take investors, but to limit it so that their bylaws would have to say you don't allow non-patron voters. So only farmers have control of the cooperative, but we have more access to financing, if that makes sense.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think one of the testifiers mentioned that the returns would go back to farmers, but if you have outside investors, the very nature of investing is to get a return. So not all the returns would go back to farmers, correct?
Correct. Not all the returns, but more so than a private business is the intent. Thank you, Chair Vang. Sorry.
Representative Anderson?
Well, that's all for now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tapke was distracting me. If I could have maybe the Department of Ag come up just to say how do they support the program and how they would implement it. Just to get that on the record, Madam Chair.
If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Huguenin, and I'm the Director of the Ag Marketing and Development Division at the Department of Agriculture, and it would be my folks that would administer this program. certainly we're very supportive of anything we can do to help farmers form co-ops, help farmers invest together and band together to do the kinds of projects that you've heard the testifiers mention today. The language itself in terms of restoring this statute and allowing the department to do these grants is something that we asked for in the last session, and we appreciate you passing that last year. So thank you for the opportunity.
Representative Hansen, all right. Any further questions? I think I have a question for Farmer Rodrigo. You mentioned briefly that you had to close one of your cooperatives. Can you explain what were some of the difficulties while running the cooperative? And if you can identify yourself again before the committee.
Yes. Okay. My name is Rodrigo Cala. One of the difficulties for a farmer, it's the sometimes farmers, they don't realize how expensive it is to sell produce on the cities. Many of these farms are out of the cities, of the metro area. So one of the barriers are the language barriers. So some farmers, they have the skills, but other farmers, they don't have the skills. And the more difficult thing for farmer, for any culture, it's the markets. And if you don't have the ability to do that step, it's very difficult. And working in a co-op, I mean, you can, instead to one farmer to drive around the cities, if you have a few farmers, like this is an example, like 10 farmers bring the produce to a central locations. So in that location, you have a big truck or a semi, so you can bring this food to strategic points in the city, so the distribution part, it can be achieved in an easy way, because sometimes for a farmers, they don't have the money and they don't have the infrastructure for distribute this produce. And it's, I can say, like language barriers, land access too, it's a key part. I see that problem in the Hmong community and the Latino community. With the prices of land in this time, it's in some cases is no achieve that kind of goal. So if you have a group of farmers working together, they can buy a big extensions of land. They can subdivide on a small parcels, so they can do this kind of work collectively. So then they can share machinery, they can share buildings, they can share trucks. So I think it's for the benefit of the community.
All right. Thank you, Rodrigo. Any further questions? Representative Cha.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. As a BIPOC farmer in Minnesota, do you feel you have adequate access to resources from the state of Minnesota?
Rodrigo?
In some cases, yes. But in other cases, I think Minnesota, it's a progressive state. I don't see the support on this state than, I mean, in comparison with other states, like in Wisconsin, it's less support. So for me, I feel more inclusive in Minnesota. So I'm going to explain about my work. I have a farm in Wisconsin, but I bring my produce. We are really in the border of Minnesota and Wisconsin. So I feel all my 100% of my produce is growing in Wisconsin, but we sell in Minnesota. And I'm working with farmers. I'm working with Latino Economic Development Center, and all my work, it's based on Minnesota. And the support we can get in Minnesota, I think, is better, is bigger, even if you have issues with the language. And I know Minnesota, it's a more a friendly state for immigrants. And I feel way more inclusive state, Minnesota, than other ones. I can have the comparison with Wisconsin, Iowa, South Dakota, and North Dakota. And I think for farmers, Minnesota, we feel more safe. I mean, for immigrants.
Representative Cha.
Well, thank you for your testimony. And as a Minnesotan, we welcome you here. So continue your great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Yeah, I think it's important as we continue to listen to the needs of farmers and emerging farmers, I hope that we can continue building a robust and supportive ecosystem to support all farmers in need. And with that, I don't see any further. Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a quick question to the bill author, Representative Purcell. Your bill calls for funding for 2 years. Do you envision that becoming base funding, or is this just a one-time appropriation?
Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. I think this would be a great jump start, a great restart. Be happy to have that conversation down the road. I think in getting bill authors, we were having discussions about the dollar amount, both in total and the individual grant amounts. So I think, I imagine we will learn a lot from restarting this program and then find out if it's a thing that is being used and if it's a good use of funds. So I guess I feel non-committal right now.
Representative Anderson? All right. Seeing no further discussion, closing remarks, Representative Purcell.
Thank you all for being so kind and supportive. My first time I get to present a bill that's very near and dear to my heart, and I want to thank all of the testifiers and all the folks who have supported this work. I think this could be just a wonderful catalyst should it be included. So thank you for your consideration and your time.
And if you could please renew your motion.
I renew my motion for House File 1034 for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill.
Right. House File 1034 is laid over. Our final presentation is from the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. We have Lucas Sostrom. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Vang. Good morning, committee members. Or afternoon. It's, wow, yes. I've got with me today the Mersu family who put in a lot of work to dedicate 24 hours here for Dairy Day at the Capitol. It's actually Dairy Day Eve. So to all those who celebrate, this is the night where you, you know, you come together. But tomorrow's the big Dairy Day celebration. So I apologize. There's no cheese and ice cream, but you can find us tomorrow, Governor's Dining Room, and there'll be hopefully further celebrations later on. If it's okay, Chair Vang, I'm going to provide some brief testimony, play the video, and then I'll turn it over if you have any questions for me or the Mercer family.
Please go ahead.
So good afternoon again. I'm Lucas Sjostrom, for the record, Executive Director of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. I'm also a dairy farmer and cheese plant owner from Bruton, Minnesota. The Minnesota dairy industry finally has put together a couple years in the black where we've been above average, though with meaningful state and federal support. Of course, as economic cycles go with commodity markets, the projected worldwide production forecast looks to be rising, and that would result in falling dairy prices in 2023. However, I'm so proud of what we've built in Minnesota. I do not know if it is alone the Dairy Assistance Investment and Relief Initiative, Dairy with an I, program we built together in 2019, education from private industry and the University of Minnesota, a combination of those or other items, but it seems like we've recently seen more strategic farm transitions. Minnesota dairy farmers answered your call in 2019 and enrolled in the Dairy with an I program en masse. We had over 80% of Minnesota dairy farms sign up for the margin insurance program thanks to your help, compared with just 65% across the country. While we'd rather never have the insurance programs kick in, when they did, they really helped. In 2021, small farms received an average of $52,000 from federal insurance indemnities to make up for quickly falling markets. It was a fire insurance at a time we had no clue the fire, a year after the pandemic was coming. We'd ask that you again support the Dairy with an I program. Ask any dairy farmer that used the program. Sign up was easy. Simple forms were created through collaboration between federal and state agencies. Our cooperatives and processors quickly sent out everyone's milk production totals and rebates were out the door just a few weeks after session. This incentivized Minnesota participation in the federal DMC, dairy margin coverage, program just when we needed it. And now we need it again. We're asking each of you to support the updated Dairy with an Eye program. Dairy farms that have approximately 220 cows and below is the program target. Our average Minnesota dairy farm is 208 cows as of 2021, and we'll get new numbers next month. But we actually are down 7,000 cows in the state compared to 10 years prior. South Dakota, in the meantime, is up 65,000 cows over the same period as more animals go to places where there aren't animals today. We believe Dairy with an Eye will help us preserve and grow our state's smaller dairy farms again. We also care about other issues, of course, and one of the things that dairy cows fit very well into is soil health. We're striving to be leaders in conservation. We continue to expand our private and association resources to learn and teach innovative practices that encourage enhanced soil health benefits. For example, did you know that dairy cows are both natural soil health and water quality contributors? When used well, they eat multi-year forage crops like grasses, clover, and alfalfa that stabilize soil and reduce erosion while returning nutrients to the soil through their naturally produced fertilizer. This reduces the need to import costly commercial fertilizer each year for farmers. As a member of this committee, you are likely well aware that all farmers are cost takers by this point in session. On our farm, any fee, tax, or regulatory compliance requirement works against our bottom line, period. We have no ability to pass that cost on to anyone else. Anytime Minnesota is out of line with neighboring states, we're at a disadvantage. That's why we were excited to see a proposal from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to cover water fees that many farms pay, just like it is in our neighboring states. Finally, I'm sure some of you are aware of the exciting opportunities we have ahead of us. Europe and New Zealand are the two main competitors for U.S. dairy exports. Both countries are slowing their milk production and dairy product processing. So we must ask ourselves, is Minnesota the place to produce abundant and healthy dairy products, where the soil is rich with abundant water resources? I'd say yes. Help us roll out the red carpet for environmentally and socially conscious dairy farms and processors in Minnesota. We are where dairy cows should be raised in North America, and we must do our best to invite dairy farmers to live, work, grow, and thrive here in Minnesota. With that, I would like to transition to our producers of the year. Any questions before I hit play on the video?
I don't see any questions. Please proceed.
We farm with my parents in rural Otter Tail County, southeast of New York Mills, Minnesota. We milk about 150 Holstein cows.
Farming has always been my love, I guess. I like farming. I like the cows. Children grew.
You met your other love.
There you go. And this is where I've been my entire life.
When I was in high school, the last thing I wanted to do was be a dairy farmer, but I'm glad that I'm here. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. We have two robotic automated milkers that milk around the clock 24/7 every day of the year.
That's one of the best things about them. If you got something going on in the evening, whether it be family related or school related or church, you don't have to wait till the last cow is milked. And I had a really hard time accepting that when we first started with the robots, leaving the barn and the cows were getting milked. But that was easy to gravitate to and adjust to it. I mean, that is grand.
Each cow has a transponder on their collar, and there's a number that identifies them, but then the main part is the computer chip that's on the side of their neck, and it does three things. It identifies which cow it is, so when it walks into the robot, the robot knows exactly which cow it is. And the other two things that it does is it actually measures how many minutes a day the cow spends chewing her cud, which would be her rumination, and that's important so that we can watch the health of the cow based on how many minutes she spends chewing her cud. And that's very important because a sick cow does not chew her cud, and that is a problem. So we can use that piece of technology to address that cow if we need to treat her or care for her. The third item that it monitors is basically it's a pedometer, and it measures her footsteps every day. So we know exactly how many footsteps each cow takes every day. The neat part about that, when we measure both the rumination and the footsteps, we can use the information on the computer to identify when the cows come into heat. When the cows are in heat, the footsteps go up and the rumination comes down, and the computer system picks that up, and it basically tells us when is our best window to breed that cow for conception.
We moved the cows into our new barn in June of 2013. So we were on the barn side helping to, you know, get cows into the robots for the first time. When I looked through the window, the robot room was full of people. We haven't turned anybody down since, and we have had, well, I would say thousands of guests.
We feel it is important to take that time to be able to show people that are interested in knowing more about our operation and the dairy industry in general, and that's kind of one way we are able to give back to the public, to be able to connect the consumers to where their food comes from.
Well, we built the barn in 2013, and our daughter is a kindergarten teacher at New York Mills School, and our oldest granddaughter, Audrey, was in kindergarten in 2014. And so that was our first kindergarten trip, and we've done it every year since other than COVID. And it was really neat. This last year, Audrey was in FFA. So it went from her starting with the kindergarten tour to being able to help with the kindergarten tour. Like this past year, I know there was one little boy that went home and he told his parents, "When I grow up, I'm going to buy that farm." So he was really excited to be a farmer. Dear Tom, Tammy, Jerry, and Vanessa, thank you. I like to eat ice cream and the tractor and the cats. Your kindergarten friend.
When we were asked to do a video for the AT&T video contest, we didn't really take it very seriously. We thought it was just a couple kids coming to do a short little video for a school project or something like that.
It was a very busy season, yes, corn chopping time. I mean, that's a major harvest for us. Before they left, they said it's competition, and they said when they got into their vehicles, they said the winner of this contest, they said those who do the videoing get 10 grand and those, the business also gets 10 grand. So we laughed at them.
It was such a neat, high quality, well-produced video that we thought it was a really well-produced production of what we do and what our farm is, and we're thankful for that opportunity.
We were the winners of the AT&T National Technology and a Small Business Contest that year.
We were really busy, but we let the people come, and it turned out great for them and great for us.
Well, it's really neat because I didn't grow up on a farm, so for my kids to be able to have a farm to run around and play and be involved with the animals, be around them and grow up in this, it's really neat.
Pumpkin spice.
I'm thankful for my forefathers and their families that immigrated from Finland to this area of the country, and they each generation has put a lot of hard work and sacrifices into continuing farming and having to do a lot more physical labor and struggles and probably I have to go through, and being able to be successful and provide for their family at the same time is really special, and without what they've done, I probably wouldn't be farming today. So any success that our farm has, it goes back to generations before us.
Thank you. I see Tom and Tammy Mersu. Would you like to say anything before the committee?
I'll be honest, this is really not my position. I've never been in your building before. I'll be upfront with you. This is definitely an honor. It's a humbling experience. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. And I see, I recognize that your kids, you have kids here today, Jeremy, Vanessa, and Johan. Just thank you for being here today. Would you like to say anything before the committee as well?
No, just thank you for taking time to have us here and watch the video, and appreciate everything you guys do. So thank you.
Thank you. And Lucas? All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. Congratulations on being Dairy Producers of the Year. Representative Anderson, go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt what you were saying.
Oh, no, I was just, finishing my remarks. Go ahead, Representative Anderson.
For the family, just a great video. Those are the most gentle cows I think I've ever seen. Oh, they are real pets. You know, the kids love them, and the calves, and the cows are gentle. And I bet your production shows that, too. So, yeah, just congratulations on your operation. And, it looks like you have robots, so somebody is taking care of the milking at home. But I know it's a lot of work, 24-hour day job. But just thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
Any questions or remarks from the members of the committee? Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, thank you. That was a beautiful video, and the cows look amazing. I have a question about cold storage. I know, so I'm in Carver County, and we have a co-op, and I've noticed that sometimes when we get products from smaller farms, it seems like the dairy products go bad quicker, and I'm just wondering if you have issues with storing, refrigerator issues or cold storage issues. If you could talk to that?
No, we really don't. We run pretty decent quality accounts, or counts rather. The milk truck comes every other day. We're fortunate. Our milk gets shipped into Perm, Minnesota. There's a cheese plant there. They're only 15 minutes away. So to this point, yeah, we're fine. We have a large enough storage tank that it holds 2 days' supply.
Lucas?
Yeah, Chair Vang and committee members and Representative Ream, I have the pleasure of most days being partner in a small cheese plant, and just the technology it takes to keep the shelf life at that level is extraordinary. And what our larger plants do, and 90% of my milk goes to a much larger plant, they're just able to make leaps and bounds, and that's why we're able to export and able to keep things on the shelves. Most of the things that have come with continued shelf life, for example, milk used to last on the shelf about 2 weeks, and now lasts 4 weeks or more, and that's mostly due to milk quality back on the farm. And so those individual variances between each farm when we are together in our co-ops, and then the technology they have to extend the shelf life, not adding things but just keeping things sanitary, that's usually the big difference between a much larger co-op and a smaller brand, per se.
Representative Reed?
Thank you.
Representative Cha?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for making the trip down to the Capitol. Congratulations on being the Milk Producer of the Year. My question is, as milk farmers in Minnesota, do you feel like you're getting adequate resources from the state of Minnesota, and what can we do better to service your industry?
Tom?
Okay, like Lucas mentioned, I mean, the DMC program, it's best if it does not have to kick in. That means we're getting more of a fair share, but with the program there, it definitely does help. So any dollars you can put towards that is much appreciated. So the one thing, I mean, I realize our nation is a nation of a free enterprise. What we have locally, we have some mega farms, mainly one mega farm. When they put up a barn, there used to be 10,000 cows in a barn. Now it's over 11 to make it cash flow. Think how many small operators that has taken out of the business. And I think if more dollars could be put into, I mean, for a young farmer to start up today, that is like next to impossible with today's ag economics.
Representative Cha? Or Jeremy, would you like to respond?
Yeah, as a young beginning farmer, I was a recipient of the Minnesota Livestock Investment Grant, and that every dollar helps, so I appreciate that, and we were able to put it towards good use towards our expansion project. Thank you.
That is good feedback to hear. Representative Cha?
Yes, you mentioned that in today's market, it'd be very hard for a new milk farmer to get into the market. Can you describe some of those challenges or costs that is associated with the new milk farmer if perhaps I want to be a farmer tomorrow too?
Tom?
Okay. To begin with, I mean, when I got out of school, my thought was at one time, okay, just buy a couple acres, put a dairy barn on there, and buy all your inputs, feeds on, and so forth. Feed costs today are so high. To go out and purchase and own real estate, all we know, we all know it's through the ceiling. Cannot really be done with today's commodity prices where they're at. So it's difficult.
All right, Lucas?
Yeah, I'll just add, Chair and committee members, I mean, as you've heard, I think the price of everything just creates, you know, the bottom line of where you need to start just keeps changing, and you need to find innovative ways to come over that, which they've done, I think, limiting labor costs with the robotics. But we have challenges. That number of cows you need to cash flow to start a farm is going to keep going up. We're a commodity business. And so we have many, many, many members, many dairy farms in the state who dairy farming is their second job or their first job, and then their 8-to-5 job is their second job. And so that innovation and finding ways to do things right at that small scale, I think it's becoming increasingly hard, which is why we've, you know, focused our testimony today on how do we help those who are new and emerging startup.
If I could just add to your question there. I mean, we did our project back in 2013, which is going to be 10 years ago next summer when we moved in. I mean, just a small scale we're at. Our investment just on that project alone was well over $1 million. Try and pay for that with, you know, 100 plus cows. It's not easy. But not that I'm complaining, no. But, yeah, it's what it is.
Tammy, would you like to add?
I just wanted to add that just to please keep in mind that some of the laws to transition to a younger generation, there's that problem where there would be help available, but you can't get that help if it's to like a son or immediate family member. And in true reality, that's how a lot of the sons get started farming is from mom and dad's farm, but then they can't get the assistance because they are a son.
It's good to know. Representative Cha, final remarks.
Well, thanks for that comment. And, you know, I understand the challenges of, you know, passing farms on to the next generation or that desire. And so that's something that, as America, we need to address. But thank you so much for your remarks, and I wish you continued success and pass on to the next generation. And thank you for coming down.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
I don't eat cheese and ice cream.
Awesome, thank you so much. And I will invite members to talk with dairy producers tomorrow for Day on the Hill tomorrow. And with that, once again, thank you to all the testifiers for being here, making the commute to be here at the Capitol. And we welcome you back anytime. Every time I visit a farm, I've always enjoyed visiting dairy farms there. I think are definitely very fun to visit. So with that, thank you, and this meeting is adjourned.